Welcome back to Two Sisters and a TV, the classic TV podcast, where we remember and celebrate all things and everything classic TV. Today, we're going to take a look at Bob Crane. Robert Edward Crane was born on July 13, 1928 in Waterbury, Connecticut. He had an older brother named Alfred, and for the most part, Bob was a pretty happy-go-lucky kid. Every picture we ever seen of Bob Crane as a kid, as a teenager, he always had a smile on his face. Or he always had some really funny, adorable smirk. So Bob was always very well liked at school, liked by his classmates, by the other kids in the neighborhood. And when he was 11, he decided that he wanted to learn how to play the drums. He started playing the drums when he was 11. He wanted to learn when he was around probably 9 or 10. And by 11, he was playing the drums he's a full-fledged little drummer at 11 years old. And he had that Colonel Hogan quality, that leadership quality within him in real life at a very early age, because he began to actually form bands with the neighborhood kids around the neighborhood and with friends from school, and he would show them how to play the drums. And so he had these bands going throughout the neighborhood at just being a kid. So Bob was always someone who was very, very well liked. He was funny, friendly, gregarious, even as a child. He was could be a little bit shy at times, a little reserved, but he was always, in his own words, a cut up. Definitely a class clown. So he ended up joining, we got to high school, he joined the high school orchestra, plus the jazz band and the marching band. Bob loved music. For the rest of his life, he was a lifelong music fan, music enthusiast, and he never stopped playing the drums. Excuse me. When he was on Hogan's Heroes, he actually had a drum set in his dressing room. So in between breaks, he would go in the dressing room and he would play the drums. He always kept a pair of drumsticks with him. It was something he did for the rest of his life. When he went to his 30th high school reunion in 1976, he was on drums. There's a video on YouTube to attest to this, because he's playing the drums. They had the musical interlude, and he was on the drums. So that's something he never, ever stopped doing, playing the drums and loving music. Matter of fact, I heard an interview that Bob did back in 1970 as Hogan's Heroes was entering its sixth season. And he mentioned that he liked Blood, Sweat, and Tears. He liked the Chicago Transit Authority. That's what they were called at the time. They switched their name, of course, shortened it to Chicago about a year later. And he said he loved James Brown, which I thought was very cool, because we definitely big fans in our family of all three groups of James Brown. Well, James Brown's not a group. Well, he was a group when he was with the Famous Flames. So, in our family, we've always loved James Brown, Chicago, and Blood, Sweat, and Tears. So interesting to see just how diverse his musical taste ran. I know in one of his radio shows on KNX in 1961, and this is on YouTube as well, he opens the show with the Ramsey Lewis Trio. And Bob would always, on his radio show, he loved to play the drums. He would play a song and he would drum along with the song. He did this all the time. And it's we, too, in our family, big Ramsey Lewis fans. And so Ramsey Lewis, I think the song that he was doing was Santa Claus is Coming to Town. And Bob is on the drums and he's drumming along to the song. And it sounds great. The Ramsey Lewis Trio and Bob Crane sounded wonderful. It's one of my favorite radio recordings of his. But after he graduated from high school, before he graduated, he already said that he joined the high school orchestra and the jazz band, the marching band, already said that. He graduated from Stamford High in 1946, and he actually enlisted in the National Guard. He was honorably discharged in 1950, and the year before that, in 1949, he married his high school sweetheart, Anne. They went on to have three kids. They met in the school orchestra. It was during this time that Bob's love for music led him to want a career in radio. He wanted to have a successful career in radio. And so he was applying for jobs, radio jobs and positions all up and down the East Coast, and he got turned down a lot. He got a lot of rejections, but Bob was definitely not one to give up. This was his dream, and he was determined to see it through. So he got his very first radio job at WLEA in Hornell, New York. Bob was always a master at being on the radio. He was very smooth. He had a great voice for radio. I have always been a stickler for voices. His was superb on the radio. He had a great voice. He had a calming presence about himself when he did interviews. But at the same time, he was wild and he was zany and he was crazy and he was impetuous and he was exciting. And that caught eventually because he also went on to be a part of radio stations in Connecticut. He also was a part of WBIS. He was a part of WLIZ, and then WICC. So he had several radio jobs in Connecticut. And then California came a calling in 1956. KNX, which was a CBS radio station, heard about Bob, heard him on the radio, and they thought that he would be perfect for their morning radio show, which aired from 6 to 10, Monday through Saturday. They were losing some listeners, and they thought that Bob would be the perfect one to bring some excitement to that radio show and to the morning drive, the morning commute, because lots of listeners would listen to that show driving to work during the week. And they thought that Bob was just perfect for the job. He'd be perfect. He was the adrenaline, and he was, you know, he had the adrenaline that the show needed, and he was fresh and exciting, and he was young. So they thought that he was going to be the perfect one for KNX. So he and Ann took a trip out to LA. They'd never been to California. All of their family lived in the East. And so this was going to be a brand new beginning for them, being away from their family and being out in LA. So they went to check it out and they loved it. They loved the vibe, the weather, the feel. And so Bob took the job. And so he and Ann and Bobby, their eldest child, made the move out to California. And Bob began over on KNX in 1956. And he hosted the morning show, and he ended up becoming so popular. His style caught on with the listeners so quickly that they loved listening at Bob in the mornings. And he was so popular, he became known as King of the Airwaves. And he was so good in his time on KNX that the celebrities began to really pay attention and take notice, and they were really itching to get on Bob's show. They wanted to, you know, be on his show, and they wanted to be interviewed by him because it was the radio show of the day. It was the place to be when it came to radio in LA. So he had so many celebrities on his show: Jack Lemmon, Ronald Reagan, Bill Cosby, Marvin Gaye, Dick Van Dyke, Marilyn Monroe, Carl Reiner, Rod Serling, Natalie Wood. The list goes on and on. All of the celebrities that were on Bob's show over that 9-year period that he was on KNX. And he was very innovative in radio. He was doing some things people had not been doing in radio. For example, let's say that he's talking to a guest, or maybe he's just running his mouth during his show. Because Bob didn't drink coffee. He completely ran on energy that was natural. He ran on his own adrenaline. He was a very energetic man, didn't require a lot of sleep, and he had four turntables turning. He was drumming, and he was just doing all kinds of stuff on this radio show. It's fascinating to listen to. Now, we had not heard any of Bob's radio work before until recently during research for this episode. We've been researching this episode for the past several months. And we discovered Bob's radio work on YouTube. And it's fascinating. If you've never heard it before, it's definitely worth a listen. Because he was doing some things that no one had been doing before on radio. He did all these different voices. He was known as the man of 1,000 voices. And for example, let's say that they're talking about Coca-Cola, having a Coca-Cola. Let's say he and a guest are talking about having, you know, drinking a Coke. Well, all of a sudden, right during the interview, he would hit a button and he'd pull up a Coca-Cola commercial and play it right there in the middle of the interview. So this guy was hilarious. Like, he was very friendly and he was very easy to talk to. I love his style as an interviewer. Everyone can't interview very well, but Bob was great at it. It was more like a conversation between friends than an interview. He just had a style and a way of connecting with people, with the audience and with the person that he was interviewing. And he was just a master at what he did. And as a matter of fact, he would spend hours at a time taking, you know, tape from his radio broadcast, and he would cut the tape and splice the tape together, and he would just do all of these amazing things with his radio broadcast every week. And so he was having a great time. He was very successful. So successful that he was actually offered the Tonight Show when Jack Parr left. Jack Parr, also a guest on his show. They offered him the Tonight Show. Yes, the Tonight Show that Johnny Carson would take over in 1962. They offered it first to Bob Crane. Bob turned it down because he already mastered radio to the point where he was one of the highest paid radio personalities in the country, earning up to $100,000 a year, which was unheard of and which was big mega bucks in the early 60s. But he had mastered being a musician, he'd mastered being a radio personality. So the next goal he had in mind was he wanted to be an actor. So that's why he turned down The Tonight Show. He wanted to pursue an acting career. He actually took an acting course, as a matter of fact. Just like before he entered the field of radio, he took a radio course so he could really have more of a feel of how it would be to be in radio. So the guy did his homework when it came to being in radio and being an actor. So Rod Serling was on his show, as I mentioned earlier. Rod Serling was a guest, and he finagled a brief part in an episode of The Twilight Zone. This episode's on YouTube. He did not have an acting part in the episode, but he portrayed a disc jockey. The episode, if I recall correctly, I've seen it. There was a gentleman who was really stuck in the 1930s. He couldn't handle living in the modern day. He couldn't handle being in 1961, so he was constantly stuck in the 40s and the 30s. He was always listening to the radio, and Bob was the DJ in this episode. So when you watch the episode, the DJ is Bob. And so he enjoyed doing that. He was also in the movie Return to Peyton Place, also from 1961. And then he had Carl Reiner on his show one day. Carl Reiner was the creator of the Dick Van Dyke Show. The Dick Van Dyke Show, one of the most successful and hip and modern TV shows on television at the time. Multi-Emmy winning TV show. Taped before a live studio audience. Very successful. Still very beloved all these years later. And so he actually talked Carl Reiner into letting him have a guest starring role on the Dick Van Dyke Show. So he appeared in an episode in 1962. I cannot remember the name of the episode. It too, I think, is on YouTube. I have seen it because we've seen every episode of the Dick Van Dyke Show, both of us. And it's an episode where they're trying to do a play. They're trying to do, what is it, Antony and Cleopatra? And I haven't seen the episode in a while, but I think they're trying to do Antony and Cleopatra. They're trying to do a play. Rob is supposed to be directing it. And he's in the play, Bob Crane's character. It's a very funny episode. I know I'm not doing a very good job of describing it, but it's a very funny episode. And Bob loved being on the Dick Van Dyke Show. He loved the energy of it. The fact that they were taped before a live studio audience. He loved that. And he was very funny in the episode. And that really made him want to be an actor even more. And as a matter of fact, his performance was so good, it caught the eye of Donna Reed and her husband, Tony Owen. And so they offered him a role on the Donna Reed Show. The Donna Reed Show, not like the Dick Van Dyke Show, they had a laugh track. The Donna Reed Show was more reserved, and it was a softer type show, more not as exciting as the Dick Van Dyke Show was, but it had been on for the past 5 years. It would run for 8 years in total. And so they offered Bob the role of a next door neighbor who was a colleague of Alex's, Dr. Dave Kelsey. So Bob decided to take the job, and he and, you know, of course, you know, Dave and his wife, I can't remember his wife's name on the show, they were frequent, not guest stars, that's not the word I'm thinking of. They were supporting characters on the Donna Reed Show. And, you know, he enjoyed that. He was doing his radio show. He had a very, very busy schedule during this time. Sometimes he was so busy he had to pre-tape the beginning of his radio show on KNX. And then he would finish up the radio show live. And then when it would end at 10, he would literally run over to Donna Reed and tape the Donna Reed Show. So he was really having a good time, making a lot of money, and he was very successful, and he was acting, and he was doing the radio show. He had his radio career, he was acting. So he's right where he wanted to be in life. But the Donna Reed Show was not like the Dick Van Dyke Show. The Dick Van Dyke Show, like I said, it was more energetic. It was for a live studio audience, and that's what he wanted to do. He wanted to be like Dick Van Dyke and Jack Lemmon and Gig Young and Tony Randall. Those were his role models. Those were his idols. He wanted to be like them. And so he got kind of bored with the Donna Reed Show. He wasn't fired from the show. Some people say he was fired. He was not fired. He left the show willingly, voluntarily, because he got bored with it. You know, he wanted the character of Dave Kelsey to be more fleshed out, to have more, be more exciting. Dave Kelsey was like Bob Crane, but he had to have it toned down, considering the fact that the Donna Reed Show was a family sitcom, a wholesome family sitcom. So his portrayal had to be severely toned down, and he got bored with it. His two older kids, Bobby and Debbie, they thought that it was boring. They thought, oh, Bob, oh, Dad, not oh, Bob. Oh, Dad, this is so boring and blah, blah, blah. And then he would go on to his radio show. And, you know, Bob always, like I said, he had a sarcastic wit. He could be very sarcastic. And so he would get on the radio show and he would talk about, how bored that he was with Donna Reed Show and how bored he was with Dave Kelsey. And it didn't go over too well with, you know, Donna Reed and Tony Owen. But again, he was not fired. He did not part the show on bad terms, but he was let out of the show in December of 1964. So he went back and just was on, you know, KNX doing the radio show. And then he got a script for a brand new show that was going to debut in 1965. And I can't remember the name of the show originally. I forgot to write that down, but he ended up getting a script for a brand new TV show. The show would go on to be renamed Hogan's Heroes. Now, when Bob first got the script, he was like, well, you know, I really don't want to do anything that's going to be dramatic. I want to stay in comedy. I want to do a comedy. And so they told him, yeah, Bob, look at the script again. It is a comedy. It's not a drama. It's a comedy. And so he reread the script and he did see that it was indeed a comedy. Now, the premise of Hogan's Heroes to this day is still steeped in controversy. Hogan's Heroes is about a group of POWs in a POW camp in Nazi Germany during World War II. But there are people who think that the show is set in a concentration camp. It is not a concentration camp. Hogan's Heroes is set in a POW camp. There's a big difference. So that's why to this day, a lot of people criticize the show. TV Guide in particular has been very harsh toward Hogan's Heroes. Every time they have a list that they put out of the worst TV shows of all time, Hogan's Heroes is usually in the top 10. But Bob did have some concerns before accepting the part. He did want to make sure that former POWs and vets of World War II were not going to be offended by the show. Well, he did accept the part. Well, wait, did he accept the part first and then do this? Or he already, I don't remember. I'm sorry. There's so much stuff in front of me. You wouldn't believe all the notes that my sister and I have printed out and written. I have so much stuff in front of me right now. I can barely keep up with all the notes that we have, all the printouts, all the stuff that we've written down. I have got so much stuff in front of me. I can barely keep up with it all. But either way, whether Bob had already accepted the part or not, he wanted to make sure that the POWs would not be offended, former POWs, former, World War II vets. So he sent copies of the pilot out to them to get their feedback. And they loved it. They thought the show was hilariously funny. And the pilot, by the way, is one of the best pilots I've ever seen of any TV show. It's shot in black and white, and yeah, it is beyond funny. So they loved it, and so all systems were a go at that point. Everyone was excited about it. CBS was excited. Bob was excited. The rest of the cast was excited. The crew, everyone had a feeling of excitement and enthusiasm. They knew this show was going to be a success. And it made its debut on Friday night, September 17th, 1965, over on CBS. And it ended up finishing out the first season in the top 10. It was a top 10 show in its first season. However, committing to a series of this nature, because of course the show was named Hogan's Heroes after Bob's character, Colonel Robert Hogan. Bob was going to have to make a decision between the radio show and Hogan's Heroes. Now, when he was doing Donna Reed, he was able to keep the radio show because he was a supporting cast member on that show. But on Hogan's Heroes, he was going to be the star of the show. So there was no way he was able to physically keep the radio show and keep Hogan's Heroes. So he had to make a choice, and unfortunately, he decided to end his radio show on KNX after 9 years in August of 1965. Of course, everyone over at KNX, they respected his decision, they understood his decision, and so he was able to go ahead and devote his entire time to Hogan's Heroes. Now, although he was the star of the show, and the show was named after his character, Bob did not act like a diva on set. He wasn't, he didn't have this attitude. Robert Clary, who portrayed Louis LeBeau, was one of the main ones to point this out in interviews. He never had a chip on his shoulder. He didn't walk around like, hey, I'm the star of the show. I'm the one who's important. This is my show. He never had that kind of attitude. If anything, Bob walked around the set like he was happy all the time. He had a very friendly, outgoing attitude with the cast. The cast of Hogan's Heroes got along very, very well. The set was one big happy family, and they got along very, very well. The cast, the crew, the producers, they were all very, very in sync with each other. They got along very, very well, and they had one of the friendliest and happiest sets in Hollywood on TV at the time. They also had an open set, meaning that visitors were allowed to come and go at any time, and they could watch them tape the show, watch them work freely. And he just, like I said, was very happy on Hogan's Heroes. He was very glad to be there. He loved portraying Colonel Robert Hogan. Colonel Hogan was full of wisecracks. He was cocky. He was arrogant. He was know-it-all. He had a heart. He was friendly. He was very smart. He was very, very crafty. Colonel Hogan, no matter what was going on, because they were always outsmarting the Nazis, Klink and Schultz and Burkhalter and Hochstetter. They were constantly outsmarting all of these clowns, constantly. And whenever they run into a snag, Hogan always had a plan. He always had a way out. He always knew how to get them out of a jam. And Bob was nominated for an Emmy both in 1966 and 67 for his portrayal of Colonel Hogan. He lost both times, unfortunately, but he was very honored to have been nominated for his work to have been recognized. Now, some people who knew Bob said the reason that he lost was because, well, Bob wasn't really acting. Bob was Colonel Hogan. That's how Bob Crane really was. You watch Colonel Hogan, you're watching Bob Crane. And it's true because I binged several episodes of Password that Bob was on in 1966 and 67 on YouTube. And he was just like Colonel Hogan. I mean, at one point he was playing against Granny and the Beverly Hillbillies, Irene Ryan. At one point, Bob was winning all the games. Then at one point, Granny was winning all the games, and Bob was over there sulking, and he was being sarcastic. And at one point, he looked over and told Irene Ryan, he said, "You know, you're really not that good." So he was very, very sarcastic, but it was all in good fun. It was all good natured. And at the end of the week, he shook her hand. He said, "We need to do this again. Let's do this again." And he was, like I said, he would get very excited when his partner would guess the right word. And during the lightning round, oh my gosh, he was a character during the lightning round on Password. I remember in one episode, the word was mane, like a mane of hair, M-A-N-E. Bob is telling his partner, he's talking about a state way, way up north. And then the guy said, "Connecticut." "No, no, further up, way, way up." And the guy said, "Maine." And of course they took it because, I mean, of course, you know, the words were, you know, completely different, but they took it because the pronunciation was the same. So they took the Maine as Maine. So Bob was hilarious. Bob was a big TV star by this point. He was on the cover of TV Guide. He had made appearances on the Smothers Brothers comedy show. He was on Hollywood Palace. He and the rest of Hogan's Heroes, the cast, they were on Hogan's Heroes for Christmas of 1965. He was on the Red Skelton show. And so he was a huge, huge TV star, making lots of money. He was really having a good time doing Hogan's Heroes. Like I said, he and the cast, they had a great relationship. Everything was going really well for him. He was definitely a lot like Jack Lemmon, a lot like Gig Young. He was exactly where he wanted to be in his career, and he was having a wonderful time. It was during this time that the fact, like I said, they had an open set. He met a man by the name of John Carpenter, because Bob was into electronics. He loved to take pictures. He loved to make home movies. And so John Carpenter was actually a friend of Richard Dawson's. And John Carpenter worked for Sony. He was a salesman for Sony. He was selling all kinds of equipment to Richard Dawson. And so he also began to sell equipment to Bob Crane. Because, I mean, he was, you know, Carpenter had access to, you know, all of the latest video equipment, VCRs, video cassette recorders, all of the new toys when it came to electronics, and Bob was buying everything. So they became very good friends, very fast friends. And that definitely was the beginning of yet another chapter in Bob's life. Now, we decided to turn this episode into a two-part episode because there's just so much to talk about in regard to Bob Crane. We didn't want to rush through anything. We didn't want to try to cram it all into one episode. So we're going to conclude this episode, if not later this week, early next week. We want this to be a thorough, because my sister and I, we both adore Bob Crane. There's just something about Bob that we have both just been very fond of for years. Now, let me get into us and Hogan's Heroes really quickly. My sister discovered the show before I did. She liked it rather before I did. Her favorite on the show has always been Schultz. She loves Sergeant Schultz, portrayed by John Banner. He's been her favorite for years. He's like a big teddy bear to her, which he really kind of is. And actually, John Banner got the most fan mail on this show, by the way. Now, me with Hogan's Heroes, I first saw an episode back in 1980. I had watched, this was a Sunday evening, I had just watched a Doris Day movie, and Hogan's Heroes came on right after the movie. The thing that caught my attention the most was Richard Dawson. I didn't know that Richard Dawson was on this show, and I remember saying out loud, "Richard Dawson's on this show?" Of course, Richard Dawson in 1980 was hosting Family Feud, very successful, most popular game show on TV, and I had a notorious crush on him at the time. So that was what caught my eye, was Richard Dawson. I watched the show, watched the episode of Hogan's Heroes, but I didn't like it. I didn't like it. It just everything went over my head. Everything they were talking about, World War II and the Nazis and all the missions and the crazy stuff that they were doing, it went over my head. I just didn't like it. So I did not watch an episode of Hogan's Heroes again until the year 2000, 20 years later. I ran across it on TV Land because TV Land was airing it at night, like at 10 o'clock at night. And I ran across it one night. And I guess they were showing the right episode at the right time because I fell in love with Hogan's Heroes. I got so hooked on that show. I loved it, watched it every single night without fail. Religiously watched it every single night. And then they changed the time to 3 in the morning. It was coming on 2 episodes back to back at 3 a.m. I would get up every morning and watch Hogan's Heroes at 3 a.m. without fail. I fell in love with Hogan and Klink and Schultz, LeBeau, Carter, Kinch, and Newkirk. I loved that show, and I still love it today. It comes on MeTV every weeknight at 10 o'clock Eastern, 2 episodes back-to-back. The entire series is available on DVD, as well as, I believe, Blu-ray. No doubt it is streaming somewhere. And it is a very beloved TV show, despite the fact that some people don't get the premise of it. It's still very popular and very beloved. It has a very, very loyal and large following all of these years later, almost 60 years later. There's a great companion book that I bought years ago about Hogan's Heroes. It's the Hogan's Heroes, a companion book. I cannot remember the author's name. I believe her name is Brenda Royce. I wrote it down, but I don't have that particular sheet of paper in front of me. I have the book, bought it long time ago, back in about probably 2001, I bought that book. It is out of print. If you do find it, it's very, very expensive. It's a collector's item now. But Hogan's Heroes, definitely one of my all-time favorite TV shows, and I love the cast. The cast had such a great chemistry. They work so well together, and they got along so well together. Now, there have been reports that there were issues between Richard Dawson and Bob Crane. I think that's been exaggerated, though, because their kids were friends when the show was on. Mark Dawson, Richard's eldest son, is still a family friend of the Cranes. They would have birthday parties. Their kids would get together for the parties. I think that a lot of that has been exaggerated. I think They didn't agree politically because the entire cast, except for Bob of Hogan's Heroes, they were all Democrats. Bob was a Republican. And with Vietnam going on, they did have their differences of opinions, but I mean, it didn't affect the work. It didn't affect their overall relationships. They still got along very, very well. I think a lot of that's been blown out of proportion, as a matter of fact. But Hogan's Heroes had a very successful run for the entire 6 years that it ran. When it ended, it was still a top 20 or top 30 show. The only reason Hogan's Heroes ended was because of the infamous rural purge of 1971 over on CBS. Fred Silverman had become program director, as we all know. He wanted to modernize CBS's appearance, CBS's reputation. So he canceled a whole bunch of shows that had been on CBS for years, and one of them was Hogan's Heroes. It's unfortunate that this show did not get a serious finale. It would have been so awesome if Klink and Schultz and Burkhalter and company would have realized what Hogan and his team had been doing behind their back, unbeknownst to them, for all of those years. It would have been great to have seen how that would have turned out. It would have been great to have seen their reactions. It would have been great to have seen the war, World War II, actually come to an end. But there was no series finale, unfortunately. There has never been a Hogan's Heroes reunion on screen. When the show ended, however, and this is another book I highly recommend, The Definitive Biography of Bob Crane. It's written by Carol Ford, Linda Groundwater, and Dee Young. This, without a doubt, is the biggest, thickest book that I own. I have a very, very large collection of books, and this is my biggest book. It's over 600 pages. And in the book, one of the chapters in the book includes when the show ended, Bob wrote all the principal cast members of the show. He wrote all of them a letter telling them that he enjoyed working with them. He hoped that they would work together again. And it was really a very classy thing that he did to write his fellow castmates those letters. The letters are all in the book. Each letter that he wrote to each cast member is in this book. He even wrote Ivan Dixon. Ivan Dixon left the show after season 5 to go and start a directing career. He was replaced by Kenneth Washington for the last season, who portrayed Richard Baker. I didn't even know his first name was Richard until we did research recently on the episode. But he wrote him as well. He wrote Ivan Dixon. He said, although you weren't with us for the last season, again, I enjoyed working with you. Hope we work together again. He wrote Kenneth Washington and saying, I know you were only with us for a short period of time, but I enjoyed working with you. Just shows the kind of person that Bob Crane really was. He was really a good guy. He was really a very nice man. And that's one of the things we wanted to bring out by doing an episode on him. Actually, 2 episodes on him, because again, there's so much to cover. We're only halfway through talking about Bob. But again, we will have the next episode, if not later this week, certainly early next week, because there's a lot more to talk about in regard to Bob. Now, we're not going to do a whitewash in regard to Bob. We are going to get off into his addiction. We're going to get off into his death. All of that will be covered as well. There are also other things to talk about, like the fact that he was very heavily involved in charity work. That's something a lot of people are unaware of. So there's lots more to get off into in regard to the life of Bob Crane, and we will do that next time. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Two Sisters and a TV. Don't forget to hit that follow button if you haven't done so already, so you can follow the podcast and you won't miss out on any of our episodes. Thank you for your time and your support, and we will see you all on the next episode.